Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB's Kevin Wooster is on the job and scribbling those reporter notes on the back of whatever he can find inside his truck. You don't have to decipher those notes. You just have to go online to read the blog, sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin joins us now on the phone. Kevin Wooster, welcome.
It's good to be back. Can I admit to you that about half of the notes I took in there, I couldn't actually read later on?
There's a picture on the blog of the inside of Kevin's truck. And I might have to zoom in and see if I could read any of those notes. So tell us the story of, first we better talk about Dave Krantz a little bit and the history of journalistic note taking.
Well, Krantz would always walk back to when I was at the Argus. He would come back to the newsroom and he'd been out for coffee or something, and either he didn't have a notebook or he ran out of notebook sheets, and so he would be emptying his pockets on his desk with napkins, and he'd say, "I was talking to Kip Scott, and we got going on something. I don't know what I got here. I got some notes. And he'd be dropping them all over the place, and they would be on the back of anything he could find, as I said in the book, from a napkin to a note to a business card and literally sometimes on his hands and on his arms. I mean, he would just keep there. And I think he was somehow able to decipher his notes a little more effectively than I am my own, because he was so good at it, so practiced at it.
And he's accurate. I mean, he knew where they fit.
He did. And it was the same thing. He had the messiest desk in the journalism business, which made me feel a little bit better. But if somebody had moved something, he'd come in the morning and say, who's been messing with my stuff? Who moved my stuff around? What's going on here? I can't find anything now. And note-taking. But part of that was because Dave Krantz was always on duty. I mean, you know, he just never took off being a reporter, being a journalist. And so he was always ready to talk to him. And he was so good. People loved to talk to him. They just wanted to talk to him. I mean, he just had that natural skill.
Right. All right. So you reached out to Attorney General Marty Jackley, not to talk about his job as an attorney general, but to talk about his campaign for governor in 2018. What prompted the call?
Well, you guys did. I was listening to public radio, or we did, I guess. I was listening to public radio on my way to what I thought was Mass, which I found out in the parking lot was canceled. So I thought, I was just surprised when I heard that Dale Barcher, a well-known evangelical leader here in western South Dakota with connections across the state, with a former executive director of the Family Heritage Alliance, and, you know, a guy that's been fairly prominent in this arena. And I was a little surprised that he was hired in a very important position in that campaign. I hadn't expected that. So I called thinking I would leave a message for Jackley, go into Mass, and maybe get a call back later on. But I got him on the second or third ring. And, you know, and he's really good about that. I mean, he's good about responding to calls. And even when it's just me teasing him, which I did. and I've been teasing him a little bit about trending right, even farther right than I think he is normally, and he would argue that he's a conservative, but I think he's going to be real conservative in this primary against Kristi Noem to try and, you know, capture as much of the conservative base as he can.
All right, so tell me why Mr. Jackley is excited about Dale Barcher being on the team. What is it about him that makes him a valuable member?
Well, he's a very likable guy, and you know, I might not agree with everything he agrees or believes on social issues or certain other issues, but he's somebody that I always like to see, and he's always pleasant and polite, and if he disagrees with you, he usually does it without screaming at you, which is nice, and doesn't I don't think he's ever accused me of being a member of the lamestream media or the drive-by media or the left-wing liberal biased media. If he thinks that, he doesn't voice it. And he has deep connections in that important community, very important community in the Republican primary, and also, I think, for fundraising purposes.
So let's pause there because I want to know, what's your definition of evangelicals? When we use that word, it's an umbrella. Who exactly are we talking about?
Somebody that's not me.
I will stipulate to that, but who are we talking about?
As a long and strong Catholic, I'm supposed to evangelize, but I'm just not comfortable with that. And I don't think most Catholics, I don't think that's in our DNA very, very well to go out and spread the gospel literally.
Protestant Christians, we've narrowed it down to that.
I think a Protestant Christian, typically, although there are evangelical Catholics that believe that route and really take that, their religious parts of their life into their politics. And I would say myself that I'm informed by my religious beliefs, but I'm also fairly careful about the separation of church and state and about those kinds of things. And I think a lot of evangelical Christians that I know would believe that there's too much separation of church and state, and there needs to be more religion in our government decision making.
All right. So when we talk about evangelicals in South Dakota, are we talking about an individual on the farm in Lemon, or are we talking about a church in Rapid City? Like, what, you know, is it a group of people that tend to vote the same way, or is it just a philosophy that sort of spreads out through across the state? And, you know, if you tend to vote leading with your faith beliefs, that sort of makes you an evangelical.
Yeah, I think
this is important to me as we...
Well, and I think there's I've actually seen Dale Barcher in Catholic masses, and I think that he's made some connections in the Catholic community, because the Catholic community and the evangelical Protestant community has not always been close, should I say, and I think that Dale is the kind of guy that's able to reach out and spread a central message that some people might consider to be a message of the conservative wing of the Catholic Church. And I think there is one, and maybe that connects better with the evangelical community. A degree of certainty, maybe, that about who's going to heaven and how you get there, maybe that doesn't always exist exactly with some of the rest of us. And also just a very, very strong weight of the Bible that is carried through the daily life. And I think you can knit that together with churches across the state, but also individuals in cities and towns everywhere. And it's a pretty powerful movement, especially in Republican politics.
All right, let's talk about some of the reaction to the hiring of Dale Barcher. On the campaign, you did some social media research here. What'd you find out?
Well, my brother Terry says that's crowdsourcing. Is that right?
We'll go with Terry. Well, I wouldn't disagree with Terry Wooster. So,
and you know, I've got some pretty good voices on my Facebook page, and right away when I put something up about that, I got some good comments. One from a blogger named Doug Weekend out of Winter, and he thinks Jackley goes too far conservative, and I think there are criticism on the other side from that he has played in some of the court suits he's engaged in that had as much political intent as they did legal intent. And Jackley would argue he's just doing his job. And then Fred Deutsch, who was a former legislator and Right to Life president, who thinks this is genius. It's a wonderful move for Jackley. And he would argue with my argument that Jackley's trending hard right, and just say that he's reaching out to an evangelical Christian voters that may have been aligned with Christine Ohm. And I think I think that's part of what's going on here too, is to try and reach into some people that had generally been considered her strong base.
Mm. Why is that group considered her strong base? Is there a background there?
I think first of all, she came in and they were supporting of her when she beat the Democrat Stephanie Hirsa-Sandlin in 2010. And obviously she's tried to hold on to that. And there were some, because of Hirsa-Sandlin's position on abortion, for example, which was a pro-choice position, which she was certainly didn't run from and seemed to be accepted by the majority of voters in South Dakota. But that obviously is a negative position in terms of your evangelical community. And so I think Christie made a great connection with them in 2010 and has done pretty well at keeping that. And I think what Marty Jackley's doing is reaching out to that community pretty effectively in a lot of ways, and this Dale Barcher hire is probably an important part of that.
What did Attorney General Jackley tell you about, moving to the right? Did you ask him that question? Is he trending hard right?
I tease him about that stuff, because we tease each other quite a bit as we argue and discuss things, and his argument is that everybody's welcome in his campaign, and that when you look at it, he'll have a Reagan-like big tent staff. He'll have all kinds of Republicans. Everyone's welcome, and he's not going to going to zone in on the conservative right side, although he always says I'm a conservative, so that that's where I am going to be. But he says it's you'll see more diversity in his staff and in some issues in his campaign than perhaps I'm implying that you will.
Right. Are we seeing any signs from either Jackley or Noem that they're intentionally reaching out to South Dakota Democrats?
I wouldn't see a great outreach to the South Dakota Democrats because, first of all, there's only about 170,000 of them now compared to 252,000 Republicans. So when you're a Republican running for statewide office in South Dakota, the first thing you do is lock up your base. And if you lock up your base, Democrats can, and then you get some independents because last I looked, there were, what, about 100,000 independents maybe? And so if you lock up your base and get your share of independents, you don't care what the Democrats do.
Is that an advantage? Is that an advantage to Billy Sutton?
Well,
like, what does he have to do in this context to sort of gain early ground?
He's got to perform miracles, and part of that is that he's got to raise a lot of money, and he's working a lot of message campaigns on his emails and you know, reaching out to Democrats, trying to raise money, reaching out to people like me that I'm a registered libertarian right now, and I get his stuff obviously as a news person, but and then he's got to push the fact that there've been a lot of problems in some of them highly public problems that have come out of state government failure to oversee certain monies and certain things and try and make people feel like the dissatisfaction with the system that's going across the country lands here in South Dakota, and he's been outside of that, and the Republicans have been right smack in the middle of it, and that Christie and Marty have been part of the problem, and he's part of the solution.
All right, Kevin, let's switch gears because we have so much more to talk about that governor's race in the months to come. It's interesting stuff. But there's another post here about warriors and Native American leaders and meth in Rapid City. Beautifully written and really compelling stuff. Tell me about this march.
Well, the meth is such a big issue for all communities, and obviously the Native community, which is already struggling with the poverty and the vulnerabilities that that brings. And my friend and journalism colleague, Richie Richards of Native Sun News, who I'm happy and thrilled to say will be leaving soon. I'm not happy about that part, but to study journalism at out in Denver at the Denver University. Very excited about that because he's a, I call him a kid, and my wife says he's not a kid. He's like 40-something. Come on, stop calling him a kid. He's soon to be a grandpa, or recently was, but he's a young man and a great communicator, and he lost a family member who was in drugs, in meth, and a very high profile for a time shooting down in Sioux Falls, who was a nephew. And obviously, if you go across the communities and you go across Indian country, you find families that have been hurt that way. And there were people there, Richie and his uncle, Sonny, that were kind of the voices of this gathering up at the Mother Butler Center in North Rapid. But they would always say, we were just among many leaders in this fight. And their intent was to walk through North Rapid in the communities where many Native people live, and there are many problems that the vast majority of Native people who are just like you and I trying to raise their kids and do their jobs and build a life are being attacked and wounded by this meth scourge. So they wanted to go through that community and look the meth people in the face and say, no, this is not your community. It's our community. And they wanted to tell all those people that are fighting valiantly against this that we're with you. And it was a beautiful march. To my way, I didn't get to spend all of it time with it because I had grandson duties that included piano lessons and things, so I had to run back and forth. But I got
also important, yeah.
Yes, also important. This particular grandson is a tribal member from the Oglala, so he has a connection to this, and so do I. Right. And but Richie and and his uncle and their cousin Julie Richards, who I've covered, and she's the founder organizer of Mothers Against Meth Alliance, which is based on the reservation. And we talked about warriors in this, and I said to Richie, there's no Lakota imperative that a warrior is a man, right? And he said, absolutely not. My cousin is an absolute warrior. And she's looked meth dealers in the faith down there, and they've threatened her and vandalized her, and she just keeps doing what she does. And all of these folks do. They're just heroic, I think, in the way they take this on.
I'm intrigued by the role of women in combating meth in this way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Richie said this himself. He said, when we had this conversation, he said they are warriors that stand up and really consistently maybe the most prominent warriors in these fights these days. And I think that's true, very much so.
We talked a little bit earlier in our conversation about Christians sort of leading with their faith, and in this case, that's groups also leading with spirituality and values, and cultural landmarks in the march as well. Fascinating stuff.
Of course, yeah. We start in a circle. Sonny Richards smudges us. I happen to be standing next to the Jesuit priest that's the pastor at the St. Isaac Joe Church where the Mother Butler is. And he and Sonny embraced in what I saw as that unification of spiritual people fighting together on this. And as I mentioned in there, there was a police officer there that was off duty. The police officers were there for escort, but Tim Doyle was there to support that group too. So they've got many, many supporters in this, trying to fight this thing.
All right. You can find Kevin Wooster on Facebook, but you can find the blog on sdpb.org/Wooster. Read all about both our conversations today. Kevin is here every Thursday. We'll see you next week, Kevin. Thank you so much for your time. It's always a delight.
My pleasure.